Next guests are Rain or Shine. They work hard, thanks to those involved with the Dorothy A. Johnson Center for Philanthropy, a regular segment we share now on this third Friday of the month. Kyle Caldwell, new executive director for the Dorothy A. Johnson Center for Philanthropy. Welcome back to you.
Good morning. Thank you.
I'm going to take away that word new. I'm just going to call you executive director.
I like new, though.
Yeah, well, it is kind of gives you a little excuse to make an mistake, right?
One or two.
Okay. Dr. Jody Peterson, interim director of the Community Research Institute with the center. Congratulations again on your Athena nomination yesterday.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Good day. Today's theme is inclusion. Is inclusion in the nonprofit philanthropic sector a matter of our aspirations or our practices? Where do we want to go with this, Kyle?
Well, it's interesting. We were thinking about how we are more open and inclusive and engaging in the nonprofit sector, and largely these end up in conversations of race or disabilities or access to opportunities. And it's certainly in the headlines now with immigration and so other issues. But another way to think about it is, how does philanthropy become more inclusive? We are a field that involves funders and nonprofits, and they work on issues, but there's a transaction there between those funders and the organizations that receive those funds and what they do. So we're thinking about the sector and how it's developing some core beliefs around inclusion, not just in the populations, but how we practice that ourselves. And the great thing about having Jody and the work that she does through CRI is it allows us to sort of equal the playing field and use data to sort of bridge that work between nonprofits and foundations. And we're hoping to share some of the great work that CRI does to do data-informed decision-making in communities.
CRI, give us just a little more education as to how you crunch the numbers.
Sure. So our work combines program evaluation, community data collection, and community tool development. So we often work with nonprofits to assess if their programs are meeting the standards that they set out and also the expectations of funders. So how can we see that they're doing the activities that they plan to do and then what the impacts are of those activities?
So let me throw out the statement and have you react. Michigan funders and nonprofits can and must work together and include each other in critical decision making for the common good.
That's absolutely right. We cannot operate separate of each other. They have to be in tandem. Nonprofits can't do the great work they do without resources, and foundations can't do anything but write checks, so they need nonprofits to do the work. The question is, how do they do it? What do they do it around? How do they inform themselves about the critical decisions that they want to make? And some of the work that we're doing through, for example, Voice GAR, through the Community Research Institute, is really a great example of how that can work. And so hopefully have Jody share a couple of thoughts on that.
Yeah, so VoiceGR is our community survey of Greater Grand Rapids residents.
VoiceGR.
People can take the survey at voicegr.org. Each spring, we publish all of the results on our website, and it's really aimed to help empower residents to share their voice, have a stake in decision-making, tell decision-makers what their needs are, how they want programs to help serve their needs, and then also then for nonprofits, funders, the government, businesses, everyone to use this information to help inform their decision-making. So we really see data as a way to level the playing field, to make sure everyone's sort of on the same page with the needs of the community and how to then plan programming or plan policy decisions to best meet those needs.
Are you getting traction? Is the community logging on to VoiceGR?
They are. We're about halfway through data collection. We have about 2,200 results or surveys completed right now. Mm-hmm. We'll have a booth out at Art Prize right at the end of the Blue Bridge. Yes. There will be a pod there. We're partnering.
That pod out there?
That is the pod out there.
Oh, goody.
Yes. So we're partnering with GVSU's art department. The art students have their art displayed in the pod, and then we'll have a table outside, and we're framing it kind of as a parent break area. So we'll have some coloring sheets and things like that for kids to keep entertained. Parents can come hang out for a little bit, take a break, and take the survey and share their voice and how they want to see their community change.
That's great. I have in my notes another example where this fits, the Council of Michigan Foundations, Kyle.
Yeah, they went through a journey in trying to think about how grant makers can be more inclusive and think about their work, and developed a multi-year, almost six-year project called Transforming Philanthropy Through Diversity and Inclusion. And it tried to work to not only see how philanthropy operates different but how it engages in community differently, changes their language, changes the way they solve problems, changes the way they collect data, and try to be more inclusive of especially vulnerable communities that they want to serve. So the initiative was launched by CMF. It's gone statewide. Many foundations have led in this effort, including our own Diana Seeger at the Grand Rapids Community Foundation, really used that work to transform the way the Community Foundation thinks about grant making in the community. And we're really fortunate to have in West Michigan not only a resource like CRI, but great grant makers who get this type of work and want to be more inclusive, like the Community Foundation.
Absolutely. And as Kyle had mentioned before, what's really tricky with this is that there is a power dynamic between grant makers and grant seekers or nonprofits. And so it's really important to develop kind of a safe relationship where we can say we all have the same goals here. We all want things to be better for the community. And that means that we need to talk about what's working and what's not and be okay with that rather than just thinking about how do I present information in the best way to make sure I can continue my funding. Both grant makers and grant seekers really have the same interest at heart and need to be willing to use data and think about this in a very strategic way to get toward the best outcomes.
You know, what's interesting about this, too, is that you can also now take this into community. So if foundations and nonprofits are working better together to kind of understand community need, mm-hmm. when they go into community to do work, it's more genuine. We've asked what communities want. We've included them in the decision-making. We've included them in, hopefully, positive outcomes, and it becomes an ecosystem that's really healthy. When you do unto communities, it doesn't stick. When you include communities in decision making, it really does create a buy-in that can live beyond any grant or any program.
Fill in the blank, without inclusion, dot, dot, dot.
Without inclusion, you really end up doing a lot of work without necessarily sustainable and really meaningful results. So you can do a lot of work in community. You can do a lot of work in philanthropy that you can show and measure results. The question is, will it stick and will it be part of something a community wants in the long term? Inclusion is that currency that you get in the nonprofit sector and in philanthropy that ensures community buy-in and that the community itself will take on these issues long-term. Philanthropy can only incubate. We cannot solve. Mm-hmm. Only communities can solve their most chronic issues. And if you don't include them in the decision, they don't feel like they're part of the solution.
Where does the strong value play its role?
I think, you know, if you think about our West Michigan community and you think about how progress has been made, how we're still struggling to be that more perfect city, and you think about how philanthropy can play an incubating role, I think you get a sense of how we think strong, sustainable communities should be developed, and that builds a core sense of values. Inclusion is certainly one of them. I think we've been very successful in this community, also looking at how you take the long view on some of our most chronic challenges and not try to go for what's sparkly and shiny and quick. And that takes time. That takes a lot of institutional patience. It takes a lot of community patience. And so I think if you look at those, inclusion being a chief value among those, it's one of the ways that gets you to all the other values. You include people in decision-making. You include them in problem-solving. You get to other values like what do we want to see? How do we want to see young people stay in our community? How do we want to see economic development in our community? How do we want to think about how neighborhood revitalization happens? All of that comes from starting with a core value of inclusion.
What do you add to this, Dr. Peterson?
I totally agree. I think inclusion is key with this, and it's more than just having a seat at the table, but really having equal respect and paying attention to the power dynamics so that everyone has an equal voice in this and seeing the voice of the people who are oftentimes not included, who may not have the experience or the education that would typically put them at the table, making that a key voice that we pay attention to.
What else is happening at the center, the Dorothy A. Johnson Center for Philanthropy, Kyle Caldwell?
Well, we're launching into the academic school year, so a lot of things that normally happen at a higher institution we're a part of, teaching, and we're unveiling some of our courses for practitioners. We're also just putting the final plans on bringing some speakers in and some authors who will share the inner thinking and dynamics of philanthropy, and we'll be announcing those soon. And what we're really excited about now is thinking through all the different ways that philanthropy can make a difference and has become really part of the core way communities are problem solving. So we're looking forward to being at the center of that and some of the thought leadership that we'll be publishing with our new philanthropy chair, Jason Franklin, and sharing some of that work in the future is all going to be part of our rollout this year.
Dr. Peterson, what words do you leave us with?
I would just second again the importance of inclusion and really paying attention to power dynamics, making sure that the people who are the end user of programs are included at the beginning, both in program planning and also in grantmaker decision-making, to make sure that we're really understanding how we can embed decisions in communities to make sure they're sustainable.
And one more time, VoiceGR is here for us at Art Prize?
Yes. Yep. So we'll be at Art Prize. We'll also be at Zoo Goes Boo, or anyone can take the survey at voicegr.org.
Best way to find out more about the Dorothy A. Johnson Center for Philanthropy?
JohnsonCenter.org.
It's easy as that. Thanks, Kyle. And Jody, enjoy your day.
Thank you.